This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
Okay, hey y'all, welcome back to your post-holiday edition of Marble Halls and Silver Screens. My name is Sarah Lee, and I am excited to be into the year 2022. I know you guys probably are too. I think it's going to be a good one. There's still so much crazy stuff going on, but it's a new year, it's a new day, as Nina Simone says. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. Let's try to make the best of it, right? I think we can. I think there are good things on the horizon. You guys know I try to remain optimistic. Somebody asked me the other day about if I ever get sad. And I'm like, of course. I was a emo kid. I wrote poetry when I was 13. I had a poetry book and I studied English literature. But somewhere along the way, I figured out that it is absolutely true that being happy really is a decision. Finding joy, not letting the little things get you down, those are decisions you make every day. So I think in this current environment, especially in this country and really around the world, of just manipulations and lies and pandemics and justifications for mandates and lockdowns, we're going to have to each individually find a reason to stay optimistic. We're going to have to choose it because there is no path forward for, you know, the downtrodden. And those are, I hate to be my old athlete self, which I definitely was and still am, but that's loser talk. Right. So yeah, we have to, you know, this like, oh, we're defeated. That's loser talk. And you can't do it. We can't do it if we expect to win. So yeah. So I am choosing to see the bright side of things, even though I'm still in Atlanta for very good reasons, because DC has kind of gone outer limits on the, you know, vaccine mandate to even just go out to eat. And they're still requiring people wear masks regardless of that. And it's just been insane. And so I'm still hanging out in Atlanta. I'm not sure when I'm heading back up the road, but in any event, I just wanted to start the show with that we choose to find the things to fight for. And I think we should be choosing very wisely. That said, I do have a couple of things with that in mind that I want to talk about today. Certainly the big story today is that SCOTUS is discussing the vaccine mandate, at least for federal employees and for the military and for, you know, OSHA's mandate, where they can require that people be vaccinated under the federal government's agency, basically. A federal governmental agency, the Occupational Safety and Health Agency, I believe. So those arguments began today. I'm not even going to go into why I think that's poignant, given that yesterday was the anniversary of January 6th, and the Democrats made a great deal of show about that. And then, of course, cities like Chicago and D.C. and L.A. and New York have implemented their own vaccine mandates where people can't go out and partake in, you know, just basic society if they're not vaccinated. So SCOTUS taking this mandate argument up today was pretty important. So I want to talk a little bit about what I'm seeing there on Twitter and in the news. I also went and saw Spider-Man No Way Home last night with my brother. And so I'll discuss that a little bit. And then finally, I want to talk about Hollywood in relation to, because you know, I try to wrap up with a Hollywood or a celebrity piece. But I interviewed a woman yesterday, and I've written something about it, and I'll be doing some more work on that interview and staying in touch with her, related to the Bail Project and the sort of charitable bail organizations that were bailing people out in the summer of 2020, and celebrities were very, very big on promoting these things. So I want to talk just a little bit at the end of the show about that. I'll tell you who this woman is and why we talked, and what I think might be happening with some of those organizations. So before we jump into all of those things, let's take a very quick break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, I'll try to knock this sucker out so I can get it over to my producer, who is tired of waiting on me today on this beautiful Friday. It also happens to be his birthday. So happy birthday, Darvio. I hope it's awesome. And I will have a cocktail in your honor tonight. But let's hear from those sponsors. And when we come back, we'll jump right in. All right, y'all sit tight. Okay, hey, howdy, y'all. I'm back. All right, so as I mentioned, I'm still in Atlanta, and I don't know why, but when I'm down here for a little while, I came down just before Christmas to spend time with my family, and my accent gets thicker and stronger, so apologies for that. That's just how I grew up talking, and I'm going to continue to talk that way. It kind of dissipates a bit when I go back up to D.C. People up there say they can still hear it, and it's like extremely strong, but I can tell the difference when I'm down here. So if it's rubbing you the wrong way, I apologize. All right, so let's talk a little bit about SCOTUS and the vax mandates. So as you know, some of these vaccine mandates have popped up in cities, or mainly blue cities around the country. And it's kind of a strange thing, because the more that these things, so I sort of feel like the cities that are doing this are doing it because it's kind of a last, it's kind of a death throw for the Democrats on this sort of mandate and lockdown and restriction sort of program they've been implementing for the last couple of years. The more that we learn about the vaccines, the more we learn that they don't really stop transmission. They don't really stop you from getting it. There's a lot of people saying, well, it keeps you from getting sicker. But that seems to be an individual sort of benefit. That doesn't have anything to do with we're all in this together, which is how they sold this for the last 2 years. That just sounds like that's an individual maybe not getting as sick and not suffering as much, potentially not dying. I think that the data that they're using to back that up is hospital rates. Like, the people that are vaccinated tend not to be as in the hospital as much as the unvaccinated when they come in with COVID. But as I mentioned to someone the other day, that could be, and I don't know this, it's just speculation on my part, so please do your research. That could be because they're asking that question at intake. Are you vaccinated or not? And if you're unvaccinated, they might admit you. And if you're not, and if you're vaccinated, they might send you home. So I don't know that that's, again, speculation. I suspect that actually is happening, but don't take my word for it. Check that out on your own. But if that is happening, that's not the best metric, obviously. If you're talking about if you're not as sick, we need actual health data to back that up, right? Like, you're sicker for less period, a smaller period of time. Like, that's the kind of stuff we would need to make that work. So basically what we're saying is that the vaccines don't work as promised, right? The Biden administration was saying you won't get it if you get vaccinated, and that's not true. You won't spread it if you get vaccinated, and that's not true. So they're taking the mandate argument to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has already been asking some very interesting questions. And I think the one that interests me the most is the one Justice Thomas asked, and I know he hit a nerve, because boy, have they been being horrible. The lefties have been just disgusting today about him. So he definitely struck the right tone. He said, you know, basically, if there's an emergency, which is what this OSHA mandate is supposed to be addressing, you know, do the vaccines work? Are they working? And I think that's a really, 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 that to me is the heart of this question. If it's an emergency, you would think that the solution to the emergency would have to be better than it mitigates you, you maybe won't feel as sick. Okay. That doesn't sound like much of an emergency that you're trying to address at that point. That sounds like something else. Now, there certainly could be an enterprising lawyer or health official on the other side saying, well, it's the best we could do in the time that we had, and so mitigation is a step in the process. Well, again, That doesn't seem to indicate, if there's no other flurry of activity trying to address this, and the survival rate is still as high as it is, then it just doesn't sound like an emergency. If it's just good enough that it mitigates, then they're kind of admitting it's not an emergency in my mind. That's definitely debatable. It's certainly arguable. It's an argument I would make if I were a lawyer. There is a counter argument to that, obviously, but that's kind of how it reads to me. So I think that Thomas hit on the right question. Do the vaccines work? That's the key question here. If they're going to be addressing an emergency and we're going to be mandating that people put these things in their body, now that we know that there are some pretty serious side effects, and I want to talk about that just briefly, they need to work as advertised. They need to stop you from getting it. They need to stop the virus from, you know, being transmissible. And the information that we have is that they don't. So again, the counter argument would be, well, but maybe they, because people aren't getting as sick, and I'm just going to hand this to you guys on the left, if they aren't getting as sick, maybe it is helping stop transmission, and that's why. Well, that's an argument you're going to have to make with data. You're going to have to back it up, and so far I haven't seen that. So let's talk just a little bit about, you know, the risks associated with these vaccines. So I saw a report from NPR this morning. It was something that was speculated like a year ago, and people were getting deplatformed because of it, and basically called conspiracy theorists, that, you know, the vaccine seems to be affecting women's menstrual cycles. Okay, that's, I kind of jokingly on Twitter was like, if I were a conspiracy theorist and I posted something about forced sterilizations during the eugenics movement, which I'm sure I was expecting people to freak out. They didn't, but it's kind of a joke. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is you're messing with people's reproductive systems at that point, and that's kind of scary, man. So that's a side effect that's now coming to light. We already know about some of the pericarditis and myocarditis, enlarged hearts, young men dying from heart attacks, other people dying from heart attacks that were otherwise healthy. We're not talking about those things in relation to the vaccine, but I suspect at some point we will be. So we're starting to learn more about some of the risks. Now, I want to say this. I think most people that get the vaccine, I think the odds are in your favor, right? That you won't have an adverse reaction. So I don't want to give you the idea that, like, I'm anti-vax or something. I'm not. I'm making the point that we're learning more about some of the risks associated, which means that this idea of choice and not mandate is more, it's a more sort of poignant part of this, because you're talking about risks. You're talking about, can people choose the risk of having COVID versus the risk of taking the vaccine? And that's a choice. And especially in light of the fact that it doesn't look like the vaccines are doing much to stop people from getting COVID or spreading it. So yeah, I mean, I think then, of course, the legal argument is, you know, the 10th Amendment. Does the federal government have the right to circumvent Congress? Does it have the right to go around the states? I'm not sure that the Supreme Court's going to rule that it does. You've already got John Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, out there saying this looks like the federal government using agencies to subvert those things. So it's a very interesting debate happening at SCOTUS today. So we'll see what happens. But one last thing on the data and the adverse effects of this vaccine. And I'm not saying it won't be refined and maybe they won't ultimately have a vaccine that's much better. I mean, that's the way this stuff works, right? But at that point, I don't suspect that we'll have to mandate it, because I think we've pretty much reached herd immunity because of Omicron. But one other point on the data, you know, the VAERS system, the self-reporting system where people can write in and say, this is what happened, you know, or doctors can write in and say, this is what, really anyone, this is what happened when I got the vaccine. There's a lot of debate right now about how that's self-reporting. And so you can't take that information very seriously. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene got deplatformed from Twitter for just sharing data from that database. That's all well taken. That's all very true. And you should remember that. However, my understanding is that they've passed 1 million a million instances where people are saying I had an adverse effect. So also remember, while you're remembering that it's self-reported, also remember that even if you half that and say half of those people are lying or are wrong, that's still 500,000. That's a lot. Still a lot of adverse reports, of reports of adverse effects. So, yeah, I just think that we have to keep those things in mind as well. We have to look at the data, which is what makes Justice Sotomayor's comments today so bizarre. And let me just read those because I think they're very much worth hearing about. Sotomayor, during oral arguments today, said, this is from Greg Price on Twitter. And Greg is, you know, a sort of a digital strategist, and, you know, people know him in DCs. It's sort of in my work circles. I don't know him personally, but he's got a good Twitter account. This is what Sotomayor said during oral arguments today up on the Hill. She claimed COVID deaths are at an all-time high. She claimed that Omicron has been deadlier than Delta. She claimed that 100,000 children are hospitalized with COVID. And she said OSHA's regulatory authority is a federal police power. None of those are true. None of those are true. So I have to question if they're having to claim factually incorrect data. And those are provably false, all of them. I mean, you could look them up right now and see that they're false. You could Google it. Even Google wouldn't hide those results. If they're having to use that data, that makes me think that we're right about this idea. Thomas is right. I'm right. Others are right. That this isn't an emergency because they're cooking the data. They're trying to sell you on data that's not real. So I'll just leave that there. I'll move on to Spider-Man. But yeah, I would keep your eyes out on this, on what's happening at SCOTUS, because it's going to be very important for the nation, for regulatory authority of the federal government, for how the states and the federal government work together on these issues. There are so many sort of tentacles to this sort of decision. So I really hope SCOTUS comes through on the side of, you know, not making people inject themselves or get injections just to participate in society or go to work, but we'll see what happens. Okay, let's talk about Spider-Man No Way Home. All right, I liked this movie, but I have to say I do have some criticisms of it. The things I really liked about it, Tom Holland is charming, and, you know, I've liked him as an actor and other things, but still Garfield is my favorite Spider-Man. And I mean, the original, the OG Tobey Maguire was like, you know, I cut my teeth on that. So, and he's great too. They're all great. But I just think Garfield as an actor is just so compelling. I can't not look at him. So he is my favorite one. And he was only in the one film. But Tom Holland is charming. He really reminds me a lot of Michael J. Fox in this movie, in the Back to the Future movies. And this movie sort of does have a lighthearted feel to it in that way. It's not super serious. It does have very serious moments, but it's a fun ride, right? It also, of course, brings back all the Spider-Mans. It's kind of exploring the multiverse, which Into the Spider-Verse, which was the animated film, kind of did that as well. And that was a super fun movie a couple years ago. So this one kind of, I think, builds on that or takes from that. It's really kind of a cool thing that they do. And the Spider-Bro conversation, which is, if you see it, they're on the Statue of Liberty, you'll know what I mean. It was really funny. I was like, this is ridiculous, but it was great. It was really great. It's between the three Spider-Men. So yeah, it was a fun movie. Here are my criticisms though. And Zendaya is just adorable, and sort of the Scooby-Doo gang there that followed, that, you know, that comes from this incarnation of Spider-Man with Tom Holland. It's just a joy. They're great. And some of the special effects, Doctor Strange, always great to see Benedict Cumberbatch. He's wonderful and very funny. And, you know, sort of this ambiguous guy, too. Like, he's definitely a good guy, but he he has to make tough decisions. So he's always had this weird ambiguousness about him. So it's a good movie. I liked it. Here are my criticisms, though. Oh, and one more thing. Great on the big screen. Lots of action. Special effects are great. Really good. You know, seeing the old villains again was great. God, always loved Jamie Foxx. Can do no wrong in my eyes. So, yeah, fun movie. However, I took my brother Christian. He's not seen any of the Avengers movies. I don't think he's seen any of the original Spider-Man movies. He was completely lost at the end of it. He liked it, but he was like, basically like, yeah, it was interesting. I didn't understand it. And I realized that that was something that I've seen a lot of the Avengers movies. I've seen the original Spider-Man movies and the Garfield movie, the Spider-Man Garfield, well, the one with Andrew Garfield. I keep saying Garfield. I'm seeing the cat in my head. And so I got a lot of it. But someone who's never seen those, it's not a standalone film. It kind of reminded me in a way of the early Superman movies with Christopher Reeves and like Gene Hackman. And those movies are so good. They're so much fun. I need to go back and watch them because they were just great fun. It has that sort of tone to it, that sort of vibe to it, and I really like that. But those movies kind of stood alone. You could watch each of them as a standalone film because there weren't so many referential in-jokes. And that's my criticism. This is like, it really is like a comic book in that sense. Like, you have to know, you know, you have to have read issue 1 through 80 to know what's going on. And I know they tried to address that a little bit. I could tell that they did, but it really wasn't. This Marvel universe has gotten so deep that it's nearly impossible to watch a movie without having seen a lot of the other ones. And I actually think that's not a strength. So it's like, it just reminds me of all the nerd guys I used to know who were like sitting around like talking about their Dungeons and Dragons or their X-Men, you know, graphic novels or whatever. And they're so deeply embedded in it that, you know, you can, unless you've read it too, you can't talk to them. It's the same thing, only it's on film. So that's my criticism. However, I know it's done really well at the box office, which is fantastic. And it is a fun movie. If you know the Marvel movies, you'll really get into it. And maybe in a way, the good news is I've maybe kind of talked Christian into watching some of these movies so that he can kind of, you know, it gave us a chance to talk about those films and, you know, I've set them up here so they can watch those things. So, on my account. So yeah, so it's nothing wrong with it. It's just a little bit, it's a little bit super nerdy. And, you know, it's like the old joke back in Athens where I went to school, Athens, Georgia, you know, it was like the townies, like, yeah, you've never heard of this band, right? It's like the music nerds. Like, if you hadn't heard of the band, you were automatically not in the club and you couldn't understand. And that's kind of how this movie felt. However, the things that made it great, you know, and eminently watchable and eminently enjoyable were just sort of visual and sort of the enjoyment of some of the acting that was on the screen. So it's a trade-off. I think if you know Avengers and you know the Marvel movies and the Marvel universe, which all the young people do mostly, you'll agree on this one. And actually, it may be one of the best films in that universe. If you don't, you're going to be lost. And that, I don't think, is a strength. So those are my thoughts on Spider-Man No Way Home. Also, Andrew Garfield, you are such a great actor. I can't wait to see what you do, you know, in the coming years. Finally, let's talk a little bit. Let me see how much time I have. Okay, yeah, I've got a little bit of time. Let's talk just a little bit about these charitable bail fund organizations. So I interviewed a lady. I've written about it for Town Hall. It will come out tomorrow, but I'll tell you about it now. I'm also going to be doing some longer form stuff and some research for my day job about this because we track some of these groups as well. There's a woman named Nikki Sterling whose son was shot and killed by a young man who had been bailed out by the Bail Project, and he had like 3 pending felonies on his record. And so she didn't know that. She just knew, of course, that she'd lost her son. And she started to look into how this guy, she found out he had gotten out of jail, and she started to look into it. And as I interviewed her yesterday, this is a nice woman. She's a very nice woman. She's a young woman, very nice. And she even, excuse me, she even is very circumspect about these charitable bail organizations. She sees no reason why they can't work for people who have misdemeanors or like petty crimes. But she said in her research, she started looking and they are letting out very violent criminals back onto the street. Now, these became something people learned more about. They pre-existed the George Floyd death and the riots that followed in 2020, but most people learned about them there because, excuse me just a second, sorry, my throat's getting dry from talking so much. It happens. Let me take a sip of my coffee just a minute. Okay, so most people learned about them, I think, in the aftermath of those riots, because you had people like Kamala Harris promoting the Minnesota Freedom Fund. You had celebrities like, I pulled up an article, Seth Rogen, Chrissy Teigen and John Legend. They were big on the Project Bail. Kamala Harris talked about the Minnesota Freedom Fund, which they do the same things. They bail out people from jail. Steve Carell, Janelle Monáe, Halsey, they were all like supporting these funds by giving them money or calling for small dollar donations via their huge social media accounts. So this lady was talking to me about like the fact that, for example, the young man that killed her son, there's no oversight once these guys get out of jail, guys and girls get out of jail. The bail project doesn't check in with them. It's not like they're, some kind of a legal arm that checks in with them and makes sure, like a parole officer. The only thing that these people have to do when they get out of jail is they have to show up for their court dates. And the reason the bail project requires that is because they don't get reimbursed for the money they put up if they don't show up for their court dates. So that they're very adamant about. But they don't look, as Nikki told me, they don't look at their previous criminal history. They don't seem to care very much. So these Hollywood celebrities were, promoting these things. And it's turning out that a lot of these guys coming out, mostly guys, coming out of on, being released in this way are going on to commit murders. There was another one in Indiana, Marcus Garvin, who killed his girlfriend 6 months later. There have been a number of stories out of New York. So as Nikki told me, she said, what's happening is they're not only these organizations are not only, and they take in tax dollars, they take in donations. She said, they're not only, hurting already very strained police departments, which is, a result in some of these cities of sort of these defund the police policies and movements, but they're also hurting the neighborhoods that they're saying they're trying to help, which is poor people who can't bail themselves out of jail. The criminals are going back onto those streets. So I just wanted to highlight that because sometimes I feel like celebrities, and pardon me, guys, I know this is going to sound horrible, and if there's a celebrity listening, I'm very, not that that would be the case, but I'm very sorry to say this. Sometimes I feel like you guys are really, really, really dumb. I mean, I really do. You've got to see the link there, that it's not damaging your neighborhoods. It's hurting the neighborhoods that you're saying you're trying to help. And that's the, that's the thing I wanted to highlight. And it's the thing that Nikki Sterling highlights as well. And she's actually going, Indiana, where this happened, is actually getting ready to try to vote on a couple of bills that would rein this practice in. Like, for example, they wouldn't offer bail to people that had felonies and things like that. And she's going to go and testify before the House and the Senate there in Indiana, just in memory of her son. So I just want you guys, you celebrities, to remember this stuff. Like, before you start putting your names to these things because it's some kind of feel-good thing that you think you're doing, and certainly before you use your huge, massive influence to try to get these policies pushed because you're a Democrat and you're just listening to the people that you think you agree with, just remember who you're hurting, okay? It's really not about. At some point, you're only thinking it's doing good. It's actually doing the opposite. And just figure that out already, all right? Don't be dumb, okay? All right, that's my show for today, you guys. I'm glad to be back. I'm sorry that I took a couple weeks off, but I just needed to. So, yeah, I'm glad to be back. I hope you're all still out there listening and that you're, like I said, you're trying to remain positive. We got to do it. That's how we're all in this together. We got to band together and stay positive. And to the extent that we disagree with each other, we have to have reasonable and rational debate instead of tearing at each other's throats. I would talk about what happened to Ted Cruz yesterday as an example of that, which I think is really stupid to go after one of our best senators because he made a boneheaded mistake. But I'm going to maybe leave that for next week. I also think next week I'm going to talk about, we just lost two greats, Hollywood greats. We just lost Sidney Poitier, who, Lord have mercy, did he make some really good films, and Peter Bogdanovich. Same thing, made some amazing films. So I think next week I'm just going to highlight two of the films from those two gentlemen, a film from those two gentlemen each, and that let that be my quote-unquote review. But until then, y'all, stay good, stay kind, be strong, be smart, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. We'll talk again next week. Peace.
There's a joker on the loose from the psychiatric ward. His face is up on the bulletin board with a report. He'll stab you with a sword. Don't be fooled by his charm. He's probably armed with attempt to do bottom.
The FCB Radio Network. First class broadcasting worldwide.